From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour might be made with you this weekend. The Rochester chapter of the Sierra Club is gearing up for its annual tree planting event this Saturday, and it comes at a time when the city of Rochester also has its hands in the dirt, so to speak, with its own tree planting efforts. The city is updating its 2012 urban forestry plan, and it includes a so-called tree ambassador program. There will be one ambassador for each quadrant of the city. They'll be the liaisons between the city and the public when it comes to meetings and events related to tree plantings, walking tours, you know, how to create more equitable tree canopies and more. And the city says they're very committed to this. They want to do this better. We'll explore that this hour and the impact that it could have. And we'll let you know how you can get involved with local efforts to plant more trees. This is always a very popular conversation. They will answer questions as best they can if you have them about trees. Let me welcome the city forester for the city of Rochester, and that's Andrew Place. Thanks for being here, Andrew. Welcome.
Thank you, Evan.
Also with us is John Kastner, who is a member of the executive committee of the Rochester Regional Sierra Club. Hi, John. Thanks for being back with us.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
And welcome to Daryl Odner, who is a board member for the Rochester Regional Sierra Club and a tree enthusiast. Who isn't a tree enthusiast?
Yeah.
We all are, aren't we?
Great.
Hopefully.
I hope
yes.
We all are.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Evan. It's a pleasure to be here.
What is coming up this weekend, gentlemen? You want to start with that here? What do you want people to know, guys?
Well, this is our fourth annual tree giveaway. Designed to be a very easy response to the climate emergency. Every tree that you plant takes every tree that's every mature tree that will pull 48 tons of carbon out of the atmosphere, which is what we're looking for right now. And also the benefits that trees provide city dwellers. They keep that pavement cool so that it cools down the city a significant amount, keeps your home and yard cool, your neighborhood cool. It's what we're trying to get people to do is plant more trees.
So Saturday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. this coming Saturday, and it's happening at Seneca Park, Webster Park, Northampton Park, and Genesee Valley Park out by the pool. Is that correct?
Exactly.
That's right. It. So if you go there, Seneca Park, Webster Park, Northampton Park, or Genesee Valley Park by the pool, between 10 and 3 this coming Saturday, you can get a tree?
Yeah.
What kind of a tree?
Well, I'll let Daryl go take that one.
Yeah, and of course these are their bare root seedlings, so they're you could almost say they're a potential tree. So they will require some care, but this year we selected four, and we picked one evergreen because in our climate it's nice to see some greenery in the winter and maybe to help block some of the winter winds or whatever. We also selected one smaller tree. And also we have a tree that is particularly good in either wet or compacted soils. And then we have just a perfectly nice shade tree for...
Tulips, my favorite.
So it's a tulip tree is the latter. And the one for compacted or wet soils is the swamp white oak. It might seem like maybe not the the prettiest name, but actually it is a beautiful tree. And I've seen them widely planted in, I think, the city of Ithaca. And that might partly because they can do well in compacted soils. And I know a lot of people have wet soils in this area, too. So that's a nice, it's nice to have an opportunity for a tree that will withstand some wet ground, at least for part of the year. And then our small tree, which can be a shrub, it can be multi-stemmed or single-stemmed, and maybe you can help control that. If you want just a single stem, you can trim any other stems that come up, but that would be the shadbush or serviceberry. It's a tree that goes by actually a number of names. And that's a flowering tree with berries that are edible either for wildlife or for humans. And then, which one am I forgetting, John?
You got all four.
Did I? Well, you mentioned the tulip
I threw
tree.
In tulip.
Okay, yeah.
With the tulip tree, not only is it a good shade tree, but in June you get these beautiful yellow blossoms that look a great deal like tulips. I had one in front of one apartment that I lived in. I loved it.
There you go.
The serviceberry bush is beautiful, too.
Yeah.
I'm calling it a bush. Is it kind of a tree, bush, little shrub?
It can be either.
Yeah.
Okay. It's beautiful for the images I'm seeing. So again, serviceberry is one of the options. Swamp white oak. The tulip is the tulip trees for the shade. For shade. Mm-hmm. And what was, is there a fourth?
It's also a very tall, stately tree.
Oh, you know what? I don't think I mentioned white pine.
White pine.
That's the evergreen.
White pine.
And, I think a lot of people probably would recognize a white pine. It's state tree of, Maine, I think, and probably one other state. I forget right now.
It's on one of the Revolutionary War flags, too.
Oh, yeah. It can be. I think in some of these trees that grown in the open would be more widespreading, but in a forest situation could be actually quite tall. But I don't want people to be scared off if we say tall. I think if you allow a white pine to grow for 200-plus years, it could be maybe close to 200 feet high, but that's not going to happen in Rochester.
Probably not.
No.
Probably.
So don't be put off by that. In most cases, it's much, much smaller.
Is it one tree an option per person, per household?
Most people take several. We tell them to take as many as they care for because these are bare root seedlings. They don't require a lot of care, certainly not like a pet, but they do require some care. They're babies. They need protection from predation, and they need protection from weeds, and they need to be watered regularly. But it's not very intensive sort of thing. So we ask people to take as many as they can care for. Usually that's a maximum of three or four, although we don't put any maximum on. And if people are taking like a dozen, we might start limiting the number of trees they take so we don't get rid of all of them in the first hour.
But you're going to try to get rid of 2,000 trees.
Yes, 2,000 trees. And we did it last year. I think we had 15 trees left over. Leftover trees will be planted on Genesee Land Trust property.
Really, this is a great program. Again, it's happening on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and you can head out to Seneca Park, Webster Park, Northampton Park, or Genesee Valley Park to pick up at least one, maybe more. And there's going to be instructions they'll give you for the trees.
So yes.
You've got ideas on what you need to do mm-hmm. to make sure that this works out. But can you just mention again, John, that if you look down the line and the hundreds, if not thousands, of trees that you guys are helping give away each year grow, the climate impact, what happens with carbon, et cetera? What's the possible outcome here?
Well, the whole idea, several ideas here. One, the climate emergency can definitely seem overwhelming. And if you read into it, the news isn't very hopeful or promising. There's 8 billion of us on the planet now. If we can get just a small percentage of that 8 billion to do something, that will definitely make an impact. And this is a good entry-level thing. It connects you to the planet. And really, when you think of it, if you take time to think of it, everything that sustains our life basically comes from the Earth. And civilization is a very young and new thing to the Earth. And people tend to think that everything comes from stores, and they think of jobs and careers and things. But really, we're dependent on the planet for our daily life. And we want to get people involved. And of course, it does the physical impacts. Are, as I mentioned before, they draw carbon out of the atmosphere and store it, and they also provide food and shade and cool things down. That's a big thing, especially in cities, because all that pavement, all those parking lots and streets and concrete buildings, they hold heat very well, and they can cool city neighborhoods by as much as 10 degrees. Could be a big difference in some of those heat waves.
John, I want to key in on a point that you made that I think shouldn't be lost here. It can be easy to forget that there are a number of developments in the last couple hundred years that are new in human history, extremely new in the history of this planet. That's industrialization. That is democracy. That is the way that our cities are planned and lived. I mean, it's technology. These are all very, very new things here. And we kind of sometimes can forget that this Earth has been here long before that. It will be here long after us, probably just, you know, in its own state. We talk about saving the planet. What we're really trying to do is save the ecosystems for the multiple species that are currently alive. The planet will be here, right?
And most personally, ourselves. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, you can't enjoy life if you don't have it. So and you can't have human life if you don't have other life. That's the big ticket, that we're part of a web. We are. The planet was not created for us. We're actually part of the scheme. We were part of the Earth.
Well, I mean, I appreciate the work that this group is doing. And listeners, if you've got questions either about Saturday, if you want to pick up a tree and learn more, but if you've got questions about that, you can call. Or if you've got questions about how the trees are doing in your yard, in your neighborhood, et cetera, it's a great chance to get some information this hour. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester on this Earth Day, 263-9994. You can email connections@WXXI.org. I think Andrew Place would tell you, though, if you pick up a tree on Saturday, you know, don't plant it in the middle of a city park.
Correct.
Right? You know, that's, you know, it's for you and it's for your property to plant. The city has its own plans going on. And Andrew, can you describe a little bit, first of all, what your role entails as the city forester for the city of Rochester?
Sure. First of all, thank you, John and Daryl, for the information on the Sierra Club's tree planting. We're happy to be partners with you. I believe this is 4 years, right?
Yes, our fourth year. And we're very grateful to the city as well. They've been very supportive.
Right, along with Monroe County. So the three of us kind of work together on that one. The City Forestry Division. What do? We're responsible for the maintenance and care of approximately 64,000 trees on city streets and city parks and cemeteries and other city-owned properties. We plant trees, remove trees, trim trees, water trees, grind stumps, and everything, and respond to storms, and anything else in between. Tree-related is what we do.
How busy is your life? I mean,
how much time you got?
I know. I can't even imagine how busy you and the team is.
It's been a busy winter, and that's a good thing. A lot of attention on what we do these days, starting with our Urban Forest Master Plan update. It's been a big process this winter. The last time it was updated was in 2012. So here we are, 12 years out from the last update. There's many new things, new concepts, new initiatives going on. So we've spent the winter of developing that new plan. We've had public meetings. We had the Tree Ambassador Program, where people are out on the ground doing door-to-door outreach, trying to get the word out on trees and what we do at forestry. The ambassadors have also been involved at pop-up events at libraries and rec centers. And we're working right now to develop the recommendations based on the engagement process we've been through. And we're about ready to go back to the table with our draft and have another round of meetings set to begin, I believe, first week of May. And we're going to show, you know, present what we came up with based on feedback. And it's one more opportunity for the public to get involved and take a look at what we come up with before we finalize it by the end of June.
We'll talk more about that in a moment here. I want to kind of stay in a little bit more of the day-to-day work that you do. Is there a most common request, complaint, concern that you're hearing from residents about their trees?
Yes, all of the above. the most common complaint is probably sewers, sewer lines, roots in the sewers. We'll get a phone call from a concerned resident that the roots have blocked my sewer line. Please take a look. Please remove the tree. The answer is usually no to that, unless the tree has other issues that become public safety issues.
Wow. So how do you deal with that?
It's tough. It's difficult. While we sympathize with those that have those issues, if we responded in a way to remove trees every time we had that concern, our street tree population would be declining rapidly. So we try to encourage residents to have the roots removed by a licensed plumber. There are some products from Home Depot you can put down your drains to help kill off those roots. But ultimately, it's the pipes underground that have come apart, and the roots find their way in there. The roots don't bore through the pipes or break the pipes. But once they're in there, then they cause the problems.
Ooh, I wonder if I could ask a question, Andrew. Is that indicative of a problem with the plumbing then that should be fixed anyway?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Thanks.
Wow. Okay. And I kind of maybe expected to hear that there's more complaints about, can you take down part of the tree near a power line? Can you take down a tree that looks to be diseased or I just don't want this tree here? Does that come up?
We don't take removals lightly. It's got to be a matter of public safety or, say, a construction project's coming through and we can't save the tree. Those are scenarios where we will take a tree down. But generally, our first course of action is to, you know, inspect the tree, look for defects. Can we address the problem by trimming, pruning the tree, removing a dead limb or a broken limb or a limb over someone's house or a limb low on the street or over a sidewalk? Our last resort is always removing trees.
Now, look, I don't want to get too parochial here or selfish, but I got a list of questions I need some answers on, Andrew. So I think a lot of people wonder if a neighbor's tree kind of grows over their property, are they allowed to do something with it? Is there an answer to that?
I am not an attorney. I can't give legal advice, but
talk to the legal department.
Right. I do believe there are some
good question, some
allowances to trim trees that are over your property.
I think generally though, being good neighbors is helpful. Being as communicative as you can. And maybe not taking unilateral actions. And I appreciate Andrew's point that the city's disposition towards tree removal is there's got to be a good reason. When I suspect a lot of listeners will relate to this, but you know, where I live, if a tree goes down, it's like the neighbors be like, what happened? Like, it's like a death. You know, I mean, I'm in a neighborhood with big old trees. It's beautiful. And so that would be very, very serious. And, you know, people feel very attached to that. So
sure.
I think I appreciate hearing that the city's not naturally inclined to just start cutting or taking down unless there really is a reason.
It's a last resort.
Yeah. And then when it comes to the question of equity, I mean, there's been a lot that's been reported. And Justin Murphy, of course, who I'm sure you know, Andrew, has done a lot on this issue in recent years in the Democrat and Chronicle when they're not on strike. So that's a side plug for our colleagues who I think are still on strike. But how do you view the issue of getting more trees into the neighborhoods that have not historically had them? How has that process been, and what would you want the audience to understand?
Sure. I mean, I'll start by saying trees are a resource, right? And
yes, very definitely.
And the administration views trees as a resource, as part of the infrastructure. Our sidewalks, our streets, our power lines, our light poles.
Trees are in that category.
Everything out there. And, you know, the mayor believes that there should be an equitable access to resources for all residents of the city. So we've introduced the trees expansion and beautification program to address those inequities. So there's two goals for that tree planting program. It's a 3-year program. We've just started year two. The goals are to increase our street tree inventory to 70,000 trees, and more importantly, to create an equitable distribution of tree canopy throughout the city, specifically in disadvantaged communities.
Getting your street tree inventory, you said, to 70,000?
Correct.
What's the current number?
66,000, because we started with 64. We planted 2,000 trees in year one in 2023. So we're right about 66,000 now, give or take a few.
Okay. And so in the next couple of years, you could get to that 70,000, yes?
That's our goal. Correct.
How do you work, you know, with neighbors who occasionally, as Justin's reporting has indicated, there are times where you'll get differing opinions. I think in general, people are pretty, I would hope, pretty united on wanting greenery and opportunity to have that. But do you have pushback in any of the work that you're doing?
Absolutely.
Oh, you do?
I was just speaking with John and Daryl prior to the program. You'd be surprised the opposition to tree planting. It doesn't make sense, right?
No.
When you talked earlier about where we come from, the forest, right? And why would we not want more trees? People, there's a perception of trees out there as being messy, interfering with my house, my sewer, like I said. dropping fruit. So there's a myriad of reasons why people do not want trees planted in front of their house. Our engagement and outreach program is trying to overcome some of those obstacles. The tree ambassadors are out there walking the streets, talking to people, trying to win people over, trying to convince people, look, these trees provide a myriad of benefits. They outweigh the negatives. Please accept these trees. We want to expand that urban forest and all the benefits it provides.
Generally speaking, does that outreach work? Are you winning people over?
I think the jury is still out on it. Okay. I think so. I think we are seeing some a little bit of turnaround on that, but we still got a little ways to go, and we're encouraging everybody out there that appreciates and supports us to get the word out and help us get that word out on trees.
Daryl, do you want to add to that?
I just wanted to say I've had some opportunity to reflect on this. I've spent some time in the city helping with a few gardens, doing some garden tours and other things, and riding my bike through the city and working actually in the city at a couple different locations in the north side and downtown. But one observation I had is there were a number of decades when Norway maple, which happens to be a European tree, seemed to be a horticultural favorite and was widely planted in cities. And it has come to be regarded as really an invasive tree species that spreads sometimes in city parks. I know they've removed a number of them at in Washington Grove at Cobbs Hill Park. And I think, I really don't like disliking any tree, but sometimes you have to dislike where something's overplanted or overgrown, and you have to, kind of do some intervention. But I think that if people can get a bad impression of trees, the Norway maples are overly shady, and they very often seed in city lots. And there are many trees that don't have such dense shade. The other thing, Norway maples have shallow roots, and they tend to take away all the nourishment from the surface soil so that lawns don't grow well underneath them, and it's difficult to grow other things underneath them, both for the reasons of shade and also because of the shallow roots. So sometimes people's perception of trees are based on their experience, and their experience very often can be very limited. But there are many trees that have light canopies that sunlight filters through, and it's a much more pleasant experience. And they're not so overly shady, and they allow other things to grow. And there are many trees that are more deep-rooted as well, and so the surface soil is not so over, mind of nutrients as the case is with Norway maple. So anyway, I just wanted to make that point. And it related to that, the trees we're offering are all native species. They're not exotic species. There's other problems too with exotic species. I know that one that's very widely planted, including on many of Wegmans parking lots, but also in housing developments, is the Bradford pear. And it is pretty in some ways. It's flowering right now. It does have white flowers. But I might say that the serviceberry would be a nice substitute for it. But Bradford pear has been found to be invasive also. It just seeds in and takes over in lots in the countryside. And I think I read that it was actually banned in South Carolina. There might be consideration of banning it elsewhere, as far as selling it in nurseries.
I'm looking at a picture now, and yeah, I see what you mean, because there's plenty of places I see it flowering now. And the flowers, it's a beautiful time of year.
Sure.
We'll give it that.
Right.
But you're saying overall, not the best choice, you don't think?
Right. We could go on in this. I don't want to dominate the conversation, but I'm involved with Monroe County Healthy Yards, which is another initiative. I think Evan's probably addressed some people that are involved with that. But we're finding out that native species support local ecosystems much better. That our wildlife don't do so well with exotic species in many cases, like the fruit isn't as good for them and that kind of thing. So it's a good reason to consider planting natives.
And the natives, by the way, include the serviceberry, the swamp white oak, the tulip tree, the white pine. Those are those are natives.
All the species that we've offered to date have been native species.
Right.
We've made a point of that.
Okay. Anything you want to add on the question, native and non-native?
So native species are a popular topic with us at forestry. We've heard a lot about the desire for native trees during our public engagement process. We understand the importance of native trees. We understand how they contribute to the biodiversity in our ecosystem. That said, the urban environment isn't quite a native environment either. You know, we have disturbed soils. We have potentially, you know, contaminated soils. We have restricted rooting space. We have restricted growing space. So sometimes it's difficult to find the native species that can go in a certain site. And it's always the right tree for the right place. So we utilize native species as much as we can where applicable.
Okay. And by the way, Andrew, for the city, do you already have these so-called tree ambassadors, or are you looking for new ones?
We are full on. We are stocked up with tree ambassadors.
You've got tree ambassadors. Okay. Because somebody listening right now is probably thinking, I should be a tree ambassador. What's the role of your tree ambassador?
So I think, yeah, like I said earlier, they're out there doing the outreach for us, like the door-to-door type outreach. I think we had two in each quadrant who were out walking neighborhoods, talking to people, giving out some literature, promoting the benefits of trees, talking about what we do at forestry, how to get a tree planted in your yard. And there was also a few pop-up events that we held, libraries, rec centers that the ambassadors were part of. I believe we're going to have an ambassador scheduled at our public meetings coming up in May. And they'll be taking part in a couple of tree planting events coming up here actually this week. But we have scheduled. So, and their work is kind of ongoing. We like to continue the program past the end of our master plan update process. So we're looking at what that looks like, and there'll be more to learn on that soon.
After we take our only break of the hour, I'm going to read some feedback from listeners. We got some questions for our guests on a wide range of subjects here. And if you have a question, comment about trees that we've been talking about, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. Our guests are coming to us from the city of Rochester. The city forester is Andrew Place, who is with us. And John Kastner and Daryl Odner are with us. They're with the Rochester Regional Sierra Club, and they've got a big event coming up on Saturday from 10 to 3. This coming Saturday, you can go get a tree for free. I mean, it's not a 80-foot high tree. It's going to need tender, loving care. They'll have instructions for you. But if you head down to Seneca Park or Webster Park or Northampton Park or Genesee Valley Park by the pool from 10 to 3 on Saturday, you can pick up a tree or more than one, and they'll give you some instructions. They'd like to put 2,000 trees out for free into our community on Saturday. Let's come right back, and we'll have your feedback for them next. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, in our first hour, you're going to hear a powerful personal story as we talk to the team from Bavona about preventing child abuse in our community. In our second hour, you're going to meet the person behind the new show called Newtown at Jiva. It is a fictionalized version of the aftermath after the Newtown school shooting. That's coming up Tuesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's start with Jillian, who's got a couple questions. First of all, Jillian writes in to say that in the New York Times today, an opinion piece cited the issue of preserving existing trees. Here's one paragraph from the article in the Times today. Quote, as a species, we don't have 150 years to wait for a black walnut seedling to reach its full glorious height before we start protecting the black walnut trees that are still among us now. The parent tree of my own baby walnut lies across the street from a house that was recently torn down by a developer, along with every tree not in the public right-of-way. The tree surgeon who carted them off in pieces said the builder's instructions were to clear every last tree from the lot, end quote. So Jillian says, my question is, what is the city's policy for preserving existing trees when these kind of questions come up? And Jillian also wants to know from the Sierra Club, can you get more than one tree this weekend? The answer is yes. She says, can't wait to get my tulip tree on Saturday. That's Jillian. Yes, you can get more than one, right, guys?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there you go, Jillian. Andrew, you want to hit her point about, you know, new development, et cetera?
Sure. Preservation of existing trees is a high priority for the Forestry Division. We do everything we can to preserve what we have. It's difficult to get trees established in the urban environment. That's why I stated earlier, we don't take removals lightly. There has to be, you know, a very good reason to remove a tree. construction projects come through, the Forestry Division examines the plans. And we try to preserve every tree we can during a street reconstruction. That includes tree protection around the tree, modifying the plans to accommodate trees if applicable, and just doing everything we can to keep what we have. It's a great question. It's a great point. I want to get that point across. Is, you know, the Forestry Division is not out there removing trees just to remove them. We understand the value of our urban forest and the benefits it provides, so we're doing all we can to preserve that.
I think there was, and this is just a lay observation. Greg, hang on the phone. I'll take your call in a second, Greg. But I'm thinking about when we saw a lot of new, at least where I grew up in a suburb of Cleveland, a lot of new subdivisions, a lot of new suburban housing developments that went up from the time that I was born in 1979 in Westlake, and I was in Westlake, Ohio, where there were like three roads, and it was mostly farmlands and trees. And by the time I graduated high school, there were more subdivisions going up than you could count. And most of the plan for the creation of those neighborhoods is exactly like what Jillian sent from the New York Times today. It was just rip everything out. And everything looked the same. It was all this cookie-cutter approach and, you know, one sort of gabled name after another, but no trees, ripped out, et cetera. And I don't know if, I mean, I'm sure, I'm not naive, I'm sure that's still happening. But I think it sounds like, Andrew, there is a little bit more emphasis on preserving place, preserving the natural environment, and a little less put the pedal down and just rip out everything in sight. Am I being overly optimistic or naive?
No, I would agree with that. And I think there's also this, you know, this desire to create as much green space as we can to plant new trees to plan for that next generation. A lot of thought goes into design plans to create wider tree lawns to accommodate more tree plantings, more green space in parks to accommodate more planting. Preservation. We really want to keep what we can.
I thought that point was a really good one here. When you think about a black walnut that can get to 150 years old and that kind of maturation, you can plant now and try to replace what you cut down. But our guests in studio were telling us, too, that, you know, be patient. What they're sending you out with on Saturday needs a lot of tender, loving care. And it doesn't immediately replace a forest if you cut down a forest, guys. So what's the maturation timeline for things like white pine, the service berry, the swamp white oak, the tulip tree? What are we looking at here?
You know, I've been at my property for 30 years. And it was actually pretty bare when I moved there. There were some trees, but so I have a tulip tree in my yard that's probably 40 feet high, and I could just get my hand, well, it's, let's see, what's
maybe
the
18 inches
diameter?
Maybe,
yeah, 18, at least something inches. Like that. Well, maybe it's probably more than 12 inches in diameter at chest height, you know. But it's a wonderful shade tree. But it's funny how, you know, you plant them and then you get busy with your life, and then it's a few years later and you can't believe how big they are, you know, especially if you take good care of it. But I think the first year or two is the hardest, right?
And, sure.
And especially with bare root seedlings. And I know the city was probably going to put them in a lot bigger than that.
The hardest is in the trees are most vulnerable at that time?
Sure.
Yeah, that tree mortality, that first year, watering.
Sure.
Watering is the number one reason.
Not enough water?
Correct. Young trees don't survive that first year if they don't get water, whether that's from Mother Nature or from us. We water our new plantings for a season. We look for some help from the homeowner there as well to help us along with that. We put bags on the trees. We have a water truck that goes around, and they make a route around the city. And we fill those bags up. We hope that some of the property owners can bring a bucket or a hose out there and help us along. And obviously we want a little help from Mother Nature as well, which hasn't been a problem lately, has it? But yeah, water is the number one.
Sure.
Lack of water is the number one reason that trees don't survive.
Those roots, in the first years or two, roots need to get down. And then once they get down, and how do you recall, Andrew, how deep roots can be? They can be quite deep, right? You know, tap roots and that.
Sure. Your tap roots and structural roots will go a little bit deeper, but primarily, I would say I think 80-90% of the tree roots are in that upper 18 to 24 inches of soil.
Sure. But I mean, as far as like getting, tapping into water, like that will even allow the tree to survive dry periods. Some of those are probably the deeper roots. But I was going to say too, I think I have a red oak in my yard that's probably 18 inches in diameter at chest height, and a white oak that's about that big too. And I planted those when they were like foot high.
I think you'll appreciate this.
A foot high.
Patrick says, imagine planting the tree and then walking past it or driving past it in 30 years. He says, I've been landscaping for 23 years. I've planted enough trees over that time to drive past some that are huge now, almost incomprehensible, and it sparks some great memories for me. It's exactly what you're talking about. That feeling of pride.
Yeah.
You know?
But they can be enjoyable in as few as like 5 years. They'll be big enough, you know, in a room height or something like that. And you can really just start to enjoy them. So, I mean, you can enjoy them when they're small, too. It's just that you feel more, they're just more secure after, you know, really establishing their root systems. And so,
Thank you, Patrick. Thanks for that. Let me grab Greg in Rochester on the phone, who's been waiting. Hello, Greg. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for a great show. I live in a city. I travel a lot. I travel a lot for work and for pleasure. Sometimes I don't think we as residents in Rochester understand how fortunate we are. Number one, they have a forestry division for a city this size. A lot of times it's lumped into something else and it really doesn't get the funding and the attention. So we're fortunate there. And also, my wife and I are a little bit like tree freaks. We see the contracted folks come down the street, the city's contracted folks who we get a notice, or RG&E, who is sometimes the same contractor, sometimes the not same contractors, come down to do the trimming, the necessary trimming, and we lose sleep, literally over it. I can't tell you how wonderful, however, the city forestry staff is when we call and express concern. It is, they understand how sensitive they need to be, and they give us as good a reasoning for things as they can. Having said that, I had really two questions. One, when there's capital improvements on streets, federal or state capital improvements, and part of that contract is planting new trees, there doesn't seem to be monies set aside for perpetuating those because they weren't originally city projects to begin with. I'll go back 20 years when 35 trees were planted in the Elmwood Avenue corridor, and now there's two left. So I just wondered if you could comment on that, number one. And also, once a tree needs to be taken down in the city, and we know that has to happen sometimes, we can talk in the Monroe Avenue, Park Avenue area, because that's kind of where I live. How long does it take to get a replacement tree put there? It's one thing to lose a tree. It's another thing to have to wait a couple of years to get another tree. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Greg. Do you want to start, Andrew?
Yeah, first of all, Greg, thank you for your appreciation of what we do at forestry. We take a lot of pride in our work. I have a great staff behind me. They're the ones out there every day doing the field work, the leg work. I just kind of oversee all that these days. So props to them. If I can remember both parts of your question here. So, yeah, trees get planted on construction projects. And once those trees are in the ground and they're out of a warranty period, they become our maintenance responsibility with the city. So that's growing the size of our urban forest. So, you know, to go along with that, we need to look at funding and budgeting and how are we going to pay for maintenance costs as the size of this forest increase. So we keep that in mind when it comes time for budget. We increase our ask a little bit every year to try to cover those costs. The second part of the question was how long it takes to get a new tree. Well, the tree's got to come down. The stump has to be ground. And then we look at assigning a tree. It could take, ideally, it would take a year, sometimes a little bit longer. It depends on when in the cycle the tree gets removed. How quickly can we get the stump out prior to that planting season? But what we will do is we'll work with a property owner who wants to plant a tree. We'll give them options based on your site conditions there, the width of your tree lawn, overhead utilities, proximity to existing trees, and we'll give them a handful of trees to choose from. But the process, probably 1 to 2 years.
Andrew, the homeowner has to, at this point, has to ask for a replacement tree. Is that right?
Yes and no. But we do try to replace everything we remove. There is a bit of a deficit there, which has kind of led to that tree population declining a little bit. So the initiative is hopefully going to push us past that point and make up for those lost trees.
Yeah, the street where I used to live over in the Beechwood neighborhood was fully treed when we moved in, and we lost most of them. And most of them have not been replaced. So I wondered if the homeowner had to specifically request.
So a homeowner can call 311 and let them know they lick a tree that will come to us at forestry. A technician will come out, inspect your site, and give you some options for replanting.
Yeah. Is there some PR going that lets people know that if they want a tree, they have to request it?
It's out there right now in our engagement program. We've talked about it at our meetings, and questions have come up. The easiest thing to do is always just call 311, and they can connect you with us.
Well, I hope that helps. Greg, did we cover most of it there? Anything that we missed?
No. Thanks very much for the good work. I understand, forestry could be a very we don't have money for that this year kind of a thing. And what is maybe one more question. What's the best way for us that would like to be advocates for this forestry to let's just separate the new initiative, which is a wonderful initiative, but let's just separate that and talk about, for those of us that want to be advocates for your division, what's a way to do that? Just through mayoral?
It's a great question, Greg. Thank you. What do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, we want to continue this engagement and advocacy past our master plan process here. Go to your meetings. Go to your neighborhood meetings. Go to your city council. Talk about trees. Talk about your interests and importance of trees. You know, we need that support to keep this at the forefront, to keep us relevant. To keep these trees maintained in the future. We're hoping to continue that tree ambassador program. So there may be some opportunity there. Local groups come to us to request to do community tree plantings. Give us a call. We can work on setting something like that up. So there's avenues for it. I mean, we appreciate it. This is an exciting time at forestry, a lot of attention on us. And it's a good thing.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate that phone call. And I got a phone call from Frank who wanted to share a story from David McCullough talking about the span of trees and the span of human history and how we don't do a really good job as human beings of understanding long time scales. We kind of talked about this earlier. I had never heard this before, but this is a good way to think about it. David McCullough references his old college geology professor. And he said, quote, "I'll never forget, and many of the others who went through the same class will never forget, the first day he walked out of that stage, and here's what he said. Imagine the Empire State Building. Now imagine a Bible lying flat on top of the Empire State Building. Now imagine one dime lying flat on top of the Bible, way up on top of the Empire State Building. The Empire State Building represents the history of the earth. The Bible represents the history of life on Earth. The dime represents the history of human life on the Earth." If you're just looking at it from a visual perspective. Good stuff, Frank. Yeah, that's a great visual. That is a great visual. We have not been here for all that long. And yet, given what human beings, 8 billion roughly human beings, can do, we can have a tremendous impact on the future habitability of this planet, even in our short time here.
Great point.
That is what is so remarkable about climate change. It's not that the climate hasn't always changed. Of course it has. It's that we are accelerating in ways that we have not witnessed. So thank you very much for that. Great stuff, Frank, as always. Another listener says, "I love my sassafras tree. I will be making sassafras tea from the young shoot springing up from the ground." Sassafras. Yeah. I wouldn't even know what it looks like.
Looks like a mitten. The leaves look like a mitten. It's a very charming tree, and it's one of my favorites.
And it's almost like a lemony type fragrance that comes from the twigs and the bark.
Yeah.
But yeah, sassafras tea, that's a thing.
Okay. Yeah. Ever had that?
I have a sassafras in my yard, yeah.
You do?
Yeah. And it does sprout, too. And sometimes it frustrates my wife, but it's really not that big a deal. You just cut down the sprouts you don't want. But it's a lovely tree, yeah.
Joe wants to know if your drain, she says in Irondequoit, the policy for removing roots in sewer pipes is that if your drain slows up, you call your sewer department. At least in Irondequoit, they come right away and they'll pull the roots out. They've done this twice in the 5 years I've been there. Is that what the city does?
Unfortunately, that is not what the city does.
No.
Different policies and procedures for different places.
But I don't think, if she's talking about ripping the root, taking the roots out of the sewer, does that damage the tree?
Minimal.
Okay.
Minimal. You're talking fine roots.
But she's not talking about cutting the trees down.
Correct.
It doesn't sound like.
Correct.
Okay. So, again, if you missed it earlier, the city of Rochester is going to try to avoid cutting trees down. And if you've got an issue with roots in a sewer, which is a very common problem, it turns out, it does not mean they're going to come right away and cut the tree down at your request. They will cut it down if there's a real, real reason to do that. But as Andrew Place, the city forester, has said, they're trying to avoid that. That's a tough loss if they have to do that. So, I mean, how often are you cutting a tree down these days?
Often.
Often still.
Often, yeah. For many reasons. Trees get, you know, just like us, we kind of age out. They become a little bit maybe outgrown for their space, and we'll remove them there. When they become a public hazard, that's the primary reason for a tree removal, when we can't correct a condition through the pruning or other means. I think I said construction earlier. So there's plenty of reasons to take down trees. Storms, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Damage.
We haven't talked about storms yet.
Damage.
Storm damage is a big one for us.
Okay. This is an interesting series of questions from Dallas. Dallas says, I need a tree. You should go on Saturday, Dallas. He says, I still feel bad that I mowed a pine seedling my daughter got from school. I mean, how big is a pine seedling? Am I not envisioning? I guess you could mow it?
For sure.
Okay. So, but then he wants to know a couple things. Of the native trees they're giving away, which one grows the fastest? And he's asking, do you register when you get the tree? Is there a community... a community forum that owners could then update with to kind of check in and show over time. You could see pictures of whatever people had planted, like a yearbook.
Well, I invite the caller to create one.
There you go. That's
right. Sure. Yeah.
That's a great idea for your neighborhood.
And
your
I think area. They're all pretty, they all can make very good growth, especially if they're planted well and cared for. Yeah. I think
there will be instructions provided.
Absolutely, yes. We'll have some printed instructions, and also we'll have a QR code, so you can follow up with a QR code and get a link to a digital document that will describe the trees that we're offering, and also have some instructions on planting and tree care.
Well, before we let you go here, you mentioned earlier that one of the four trees that the Sierra Club of Rochester is offering on Saturday in this tree giveaway is called a serviceberry. Sometimes if you look it up, it'll be under serviceberry bush. It sometimes looks like a small tree, sometimes more like a bush, more like a shrub. What is more the motivation for going with something like that as opposed to a swamp white oak, a tulip tree? Why would you go with service bush? Just space?
It's a smaller choice. And also, a lovely plant, both for the flowers and the fruit. I've seen some around the city. I saw some recently in, I think it's Cornerstone Park at the south end of the block that the Civic Center, the Convention Center is part of that block. There's some there. I've seen some in some other places, I think on Monroe Ave near a Rite Aid or something. And they have fruits on them too, along about maybe July. And they're tasty too. They're small. But so it's a nice choice. And I think it was partly in recognition for the fact that there's probably many city lots that aren't that large. And you might want to have, some woody plants that aren't too large, that are easily managed And so I would love to offer, you know, 5 or 6 small trees just for that reason, but I guess we can do 4 at a time. But
well, they've got options for you.
Yeah.
Whether it is the white pine or the service berry or the swamp white oak or the tulip tree on Saturday, 10 to 3 on Saturday, the Rochester Regional Group of the Sierra Club's 4th annual Cool the Planet with Free Trees. And so if you head out to Seneca Park or Webster Park or Northampton Park or Genesee Valley Park out by the pool, you will find them. And they will be happy to send you home with a tree or more than one tree. And the instructions, 2,000 trees is the goal, and they've done it the last few years. So I know you're going to have a great day. Forecast, I think, is pretty good. It's going to be a good day. It's going to be a great day. Thank
you for being here. There are a lot of people that make events like this possible. In our case, it's Wegmans Food Markets, City of Rochester Forestry Division, Climate Solutions Accelerator, Genesee Land Trust, Citizens Climate Lobby, Abundance Cooperative Market, Monroe County Parks, and the members of the Rochester Regional Group Sierra Club.
You got them all in there, John.
I did.
You got it. John Kastner and Daryl Lodner, thank you for sharing your expertise, and thanks for being here. Have a wonderful Saturday with this event.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
And I want to thank Andrew Place, the city forester for the city of Rochester. Has to be one of the busiest people in Rochester. Thank you for being generous with your time this hour.
Thank you, Evan.
Great conversation this hour. For the whole team at Connections, it's Rob and Mari and Evan and Megan saying thank you for listening. We are back with you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.